Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Yesterday, Supreme Court and election watchers all over the country were waiting with bated breath for the Supreme Court to decide two cases having to do with gerrymandered districts, one in Wisconsin and one in Maryland. The court didn't decide anything. It essentially told the parties to go back to the table and come back with better arguments. What does this mean and why did they do this? Charlie Jacobs is here to help us figure it out. Charlie is an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. His areas of expertise include American politics and the judicial process. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with some reaction here. Someone on SCOTUS blog commented that these rulings represent, quote, the most unsatisfying outcome of the term for many people. What did you make of yesterday's decision, or non-decision, actually?
I mean, it was a decision, but it's one of those sort of the dog ate my homework kind of because the court doesn't really get to the fundamental question. They don't complete the assignment, so to speak, and they're looking for an excuse not to turn it in. That's kind of what happened yesterday. This is what we often call a threshold question. So how do you cross the threshold to get into the court to have them deal with the merits of your case? It's an issue of what we call standing. Are you the right person to be in the court at the right time to have this legal issue resolved? And if you aren't, they're going to dismiss the suit and you're not going to get any satisfaction. That's why everybody's disappointed, because this is a very technical legal issue that short-circuited the outcome in the case. It did not sort of end it forever. Nobody can come back to court and ever bring this issue up again. Certainly somebody can raise it. And actually, the litigants in this case can bring the case back, which is somewhat unusual, not unprecedented, but a little unusual. So I think everybody was a little deflated. When you wait this long during a term to hear the outcome of a case with the kind of pregnant issues that this one has, when that's the outcome, you know, it's really disappointing for those of us who have been waiting, kind of nibbling on.
Yes. You mentioned pregnant issues. Let's dig into those details. How did this Gill versus Whitford get to the Supreme Court in the first place?
Well, this is an issue of apportionment and redistricting in the electoral system, both at the state and at the national level. So how do we carve up individual electoral districts in the states so that we can elect representatives in legislatures, state assemblies, state senate, as well as U.S. Congress? And this has been vested with the states since the founding, and with few exceptions, the United States Supreme Court hasn't really fiddled with the manner in which this gets accomplished. States are given lots and lots of autonomy to decide what exactly these districts are going to look like. Now, they're single-member districts, which means we elect a single person from each district. And what we have discovered over time is that political parties and politicians have recognized they can gain advantage if they're the ones who get to draw the districts. That is, they can create districts that advantage their party or their members in a way that they're more likely to get elected. And this goes back into the dim past of the beginning of our history as a nation. It's gotten worse and worse lately because of technology. We apply a variety of algorithms and statistical methods so that parties, and this is both Republicans and Democrats, can game the system to create a circumstance by which a party is more likely to gain advantage with a majority in a legislature and retain it over time. And that's because we only do this redistricting traditionally every 10 years. And so in Wisconsin, what we saw happen in the last redistricting cycle after the census gave us the numbers necessary for us to do this by population, the Republicans were savvy, used these techniques, and despite the fact that they're hovering around 50% or so of the overall vote for their party statewide, when you look at individual districts, they win upwards of 60 to 65% of the seats in the legislature. This seems untoward in certain ways, and as a result, it precipitated this litigation. Saying that this was unconstitutional, that you're denying me the equal protection of the law because my vote, in essence, doesn't count the way it does. It's been diminished to the advantage of a political party and to other voters. And so they're asking the Supreme Court, fix this, because I feel like when I go to the polls and I cast my vote, it has no consequence whatsoever because it is more likely than not that the Republicans, in this case, are going to have a majority and a majority for a minimum of 10 years.
And the Republicans in this case, in Maryland, it's the Democrats who have fixed the voting districts. And I want to talk about gerrymandered districts. I mean, it's pretty obvious when you look at maps. The maps look, people have said that they look like dragons. They look like a big letter C or a letter Z. There are districts that obviously don't hold together, but that have people that whoever is making the maps think that are going to vote for them, and so they want them in their district. There's two terms that the court looked at that were argued in front of the court, actually. One is called cracking. One is called packing. Unpack those terms for us.
Okay, so these are two techniques that are used in order to gain that kind of partisan advantage so that you win more of the districts that you create. And so packing is a technique by which you draw a district so that you take as many of your opponent's voters and cram them into one district. So you guarantee them a seat, which might seem counterintuitive, but what you're doing is you're diluting the vote of Democrats or Republicans in other districts. Cracking is kind of the opposite. Instead of packing them all in one district, you create a number of districts where you have an absolute minority of the party you want to disadvantage, so that they have so little electoral power that there's no way that they can win, and so they're sort of fragmented and dispersed among several different districts at the same time. So that's the difference between packing, jamming them all into one, and cracking, splitting them up and making minorities all over the place.
So who are the people who brought this lawsuit, and why did the court say these aren't the right people to bring the lawsuit?
So there were a number of individuals who brought the suit. The lead plaintiff is actually a former law professor in Madison, Wisconsin. And then there are a number of other voters in the state who also brought similar issues, that their vote was, in essence, diluted. Now, the issue at hand is something known as the standing doctrine. And it's a doctrine to determine whether or not the people or the person bringing a case actually can bring the case. So it's standing to sue. And you need three different things. You need what's called injury in fact. Were you actually harmed? So can we determine that you're harmed? The second is can you trace that harm to the person you're claiming hurt you? And the last one is can the court actually remedy the problem? That is, okay, so maybe you were harmed and maybe that person did it, but what are we supposed to do about it? And so those three things go into whether or not you get a key to the courthouse door. Can you walk in and actually argue the merits of the case? And what the court said here was that none of the litigants in the case who brought this suit demonstrated that they were actually injured, and you could trace that injury to the individuals that you claim harmed you.
So, first of all, we are talking to Charlie Jacobs, who is an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College. We are talking about the Supreme Court's decision on Monday, well, non-decision, about gerrymandering and redistricting. I'm wondering from that, Charlie, they didn't say, this was a unanimous decision here to remand it back to the courts. The courts did not say, you can't argue this. They said, go back and try again. So I'm kind of confused. If they don't have standing, they don't have standing, right?
Well, actually, just to clarify a little bit, it was a unanimous opinion that they lacked standing. But two justices, Thomas and Gorsuch, both said, well, no, we're not going to give them a second bite at the apple, or we shouldn't give them a second bite at the apple. So only seven individuals on the court said, here, go do it again. And the reason that they said that is that the seven members who remanded it back to the district court said, look, this is a very important issue. This is about the sanctity of the vote and your ability to cast a ballot for the individual that you want. So I think that they were cognizant of that fact. And you have to remember, even though the Supreme Court's a legal institution, it also is political. So my guess is that in the quiet of their conference room, some members of the court argued, we can't just punt again, because they keep doing this with cases regarding gerrymandering and redistricting. And so I think they said, let's at least give them an opportunity to make an argument that was just obviously unfulfilled the first time through, that they actually do have standing, that the injury is real, that it is individualized, that it is not general. Because one of the things the court said was, this is a very general argument about about the ability of individuals to vote, but can you, as an individual bringing this case, can you make the argument that you were harmed, your vote was actually diminished, or your ability to exercise your right was diminished? If you can demonstrate that, you'll have standing and you can come in on the merits. But a more generalized claim about sort of this is wrong is something the court hates to touch, because their argument is, that's about public policy. We're a legal institution. We resolve disputes. If you have a policy dispute, go to your legislature. The problem here is, if your legislature has gummed up the system in a way which diminishes your ability to influence that policy, right, the court has to step in.
We are talking with Charlie Jacobs, who's an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College. We're talking to him about the non-ruling from the Supreme Court yesterday about redistricting. Next, we're going to look at, did Justice Kagan give the plaintiffs a roadmap on winning on the next try? It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about the Supreme Court non-ruling yesterday on voter districts, or gerrymandering. Political science professor Charlie Jacobs is helping us make sense of this all. We also want to hear from you. What do you make of yesterday's Supreme Court decision in Gill versus Whitford? Would you like to have seen a more decisive ruling from the court one way or the other? 800-642-1234 is our number. Ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Okay, Charlie, I want to talk about Justice Kagan here. She wrote a dissent. Well, she didn't write a dissent. She wrote a concurring opinion that said, hey, you know, if you go back and you do this and this and this, then maybe we'll hear it. And it felt like she was like giving them their homework to copy and bring back to the teacher.
Yeah, to extend that sort of homework analogy, she really was. I mean, she's pointing out all of the mistakes that they made in their arguments and how they might remedy those mistakes. And it really is a roadmap for them to follow. And she raised issues regarding the standing problem, as well as how to make more cogent arguments regarding two different issues. One is a 14th Amendment equal protection issue. Was your vote diluted or diminished? And so your vote is less equal than someone else's. And so that's one legal issue that they can raise. And the other is a First Amendment issue of association. Does this harm your ability to associate because it weakens the party, the out party, in this case Democrats, and then it diminishes your ability to associate in a way that the Constitution protects? So it's not just the standing issues, but it's going to be the issue of the arguments on the merits that she's trying to push here. So this is sort of the nicest teacher you've ever had. This is how you get an A.
This is how you get an A. And also, it seems to me that it affects where you choose to live, because you may not want to live in a district that has had their votes cracked or stacked, and that may harm you personally or affect you personally, because you may not be able to live where you want to live. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I mean, I think the question that was really raised here was primarily centered on Whitford, the lead plaintiff, because he was from Madison. And the problem was is, you could draw a district 1,000 different ways in and around Dane County,
right,
and it's more than likely going to be a Democratic district. So I think the court was kind of shrugging its shoulders and saying, how were you harmed? I mean, there was no way you weren't going to be able to exercise your vote as a Democrat that pursued your interests as a Democrat. You want somebody who's really in a cracked district where your vote counts not at all because of the intentionality of the Republican Party here in marginalizing the way you can participate in the process, where basically, you know, there's no way a Republican is going to lose unless they are the most unqualified candidate ever to run. And so I think that Kagan was suggesting, look, you've got to find somebody or make an argument based upon one of your litigants that is more plausible for the court.
So that's actually interesting to me, so, because it is Gill versus Whitford. Does Whitford have to kind of come off this case in order to make it a more important case for the court?
I don't think necessarily come off, but at least take a secondary role in exactly how they're going to frame the arguments. Because, you know, what the court was saying, Roberts wrote the majority opinion here. Roberts was saying, we don't see the injury in fact. How is this individualized? How is it you that is harmed? And Whitford probably does that the worst of the group because he's in Madison. And you know, Roberts made that point sort of over and over again. We are not going to make a decision based upon a generalized complaint that Democrats writ large in the state are losing, in essence, sort of the sore loser argument. How were you harmed? And so that's the way they have to frame this. But, you know, I think that the Kagan and the others who joined her concurring opinion, which is the three other more liberal justices on the court, you know, they recognize that that still might not fly particularly well. And so that's why she also pushed the freedom of association argument, because you can make a better individualized claim about a group, right? You can say, my membership in this group guarantees me an association right, and if you diminish the way my vote counts, then I lose that right. So I think that they were trying to say, again, as you noted as we started, that, you know, she really laid out, if you do all of this, you're more likely to get back to argue the merits on this case.
We are talking about the non-decision by the Supreme Court on Monday in Gill versus Whitford, which looked at redistricting and gerrymandering. The Supreme Court also made a decision in the case in Maryland. Maryland has the same issues, opposite parties, but still they have gerrymandered districts. What is going on with Maryland?
Well, Maryland, the outcome in that case, the court was very reluctant to leap in at this late date to force the recreation of a district that was argued by the district court to be unconstitutionally gerrymandered. And so, again, the court kind of punted, and they said, look, it's kind of too late for us to do anything with this one, so we're going to retain this until after the election. You know, part of this goes to the character of the Chief Justice John Roberts. He is so concerned, and this is not an invalid issue, but he's so concerned with the legitimacy of the court. That is, that the general public will support its decisions and will believe and follow the outcome of cases, that they're very reluctant to jump into these kinds of heated issues and look like they're taking sides. So in this way, they deferred a decision in the case until after the election, and then they will revisit it. So in both of these cases, they sidestepped the issues on the merits so that they could avoid sort of disrupting a system that is so close. That is, the election for the midterms is just a few months away, and it would cause havoc if they disrupted the districts that existed right now. So I think part of this was a reluctance on the part of the Chief Justice to weigh in this way that seems so political and might reduce the legitimacy of the...
So here's my question, though. How do you avoid taking sides when the sides keep moving? Isn't the law the law?
So it is, but... And here's another sort of technical question. So standing is, can I get in the door and argue the case? So if I meet the standing requirement and then I get there, there's another issue related to what's called justiciability. Is there a case in controversy that can actually be resolved by the court itself? And there, as part of that, there's this doctrine that the court has come up with. This is not a constitutional issue. It's not a statutory issue. This is just a doctrine of the court called the political question. And the court has often said, we're not going to decide cases that are better left to political institutions. And their argument regarding redistricting in general is, this is a political issue. There's no real constitutional issue that we can find that we can resolve under Article 3 of the Constitution. And so let the political branches handle this. Now, of course, this is a unique situation, and I think Kagan pointed this out, because this is about voting. If you lose your right to vote, then someone has to step in. That someone is us. And that, I think, is the reason why they remanded to the district court. If it were a typical case on standing, they just would have dismissed. But here they said, look, this is so important. If you can make the case then we will decide it. But the bar is a lot higher here because this is a very politically structured question that we can't resolve without really good standards.
We are talking about the Supreme Court's non-decision yesterday, Monday, in Wisconsin and Maryland's redistricting case. What does that mean for the future of voting? We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Owen from Wyawega. Owen, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning. So I live in an area that has a lot of immigrant labor that provides labor to these Republican-owned dairy farms that are extremely influential in politics in the state of Wisconsin, I know for sure. So those laborers are represented or they're recognized in the census, but they are ineligible to vote. And me being a younger farmer Democrat, I believe my vote has been diluted by the fact there's a lot of people recognized here in the census that aren't eligible voters.
Interesting. Thanks for the question, Owen. Charlie, you want to take that?
Yeah, I mean, there are quirks in our system, and one is that we count everyone.
The census, and
the census is very persnickety about this. And, in fact, the United States Supreme Court said you can't use statistical estimations for the census. You literally have to count heads. And so this is why the census sends you a form and then a reminder to send in the form. And if you don't send it in, they have somebody knock on your door because they want to count heads. And so if you're here legally, illegally, if you are young, old, doesn't matter, you're getting counted, and that is used to reapportion these seats among the various states as well as to create districts for state houses. So it does have an effect of diluting your votes, but no more so than, say, an infant would.
Oh, right, because infants and children can't vote either. And isn't that idea that we want to take care of everybody who lives there, not just the people who could vote, which 200 years ago was just white men who owned land? We've got Matt from Wausau. He emailed us. It wasn't long ago that Wisconsin Democrats got hundreds of thousands more votes, but lost many seats in the state assembly. What more does the Supreme Court need when votes don't translate into power? The system is skewed towards those who drew the maps. I don't think the Supreme Court, though, is saying this is a totally fair system. What they're saying is we may not have the ability to decide that.
Exactly. And the, you know, Kennedy has said it before, and in essence, the majority opinion by Roberts said it. How do we determine whether or not the maps you drew were fair? How do you do that? What's the barometer? What's the yardstick? It's really hard to say because, and this is the legitimacy question. If the court yesterday said, nope, this is bad, Democrats are going to praise the court and Republicans are going to say, well, this is unfair, right? These were just the choices people made when they went to the polls. How do we know it was the maps that did it rather than just people were very enamored of the policies from the Republican Party? And even though districts seem to have been crafted in a way to help Republicans, that actually this is the way that people wanted to vote. And that's, you know, the court doesn't have a crystal ball to determine this. They need a standard. And in this case, what was unique was there were a couple of professors from the University of Chicago who came up with what they believed to be a good measure, which was supposed to show wasted votes. That is, you drew maps in such a way that you got more votes than you actually needed to win. And when the wasted votes get high enough, it's obvious that these were improperly drawn. But the problem is the court didn't even get to that because they didn't have standing. So we don't know if the court thinks that that's a decent standard or not.
Is there anything in the Constitution that says what districts should look like? I mentioned earlier that a lot of districts kind of look really funny and their lines sort of drawn across the state. In North Carolina, which may come up before the Supreme Court, there literally are. There's like a snake that goes across the state. Is there anything that says they have to be packed together in the same area?
No, not really. The court has ruled that there are certain markers that they will look to see whether or not a district is deemed sort of fair. And this was actually, this came out of a bunch of cases from the 1990s regarding racial gerrymandering, an attempt by some to create districts where you could guarantee Latinos or African Americans a representative in Congress so that they had a voice. Because in places like South Carolina, the African-American population is dispersed across the state. It's not concentrated like in a lot of northeastern or midwestern states in urban areas. And so they were creating these crazy districts. And so the court said, look, there's some things we're looking for. Compactness. Is it compact? That is, it's not these sort of tendrils that go for hundreds of miles in different directions. Are you keeping together government units, right, so that, you know, you're not splitting a city into 16 different parts and 16 different districts? You actually keep it together because there is sort of a uniformity of needs for that kind of district. And then there is actually a really kind of amorphous one called bizarreness. Does it just look bizarre?
Right.
But the problem is that's in the eye of the beholder, so who knows what is actually bizarre? And then you have to remember, too, that the court sometimes does allow very oddly shaped districts because they do want to keep like-minded people together so that they have a voice. So there is a C-shaped one outside Chicago that keeps a racial and ethnic group together so that they can vote as sort of a unit and they can promote their needs and wants through the legislative process.
We are talking about the Supreme Court's non-decision yesterday on Wisconsin and Maryland's redistricting case. What does this mean for the future of voting? We're taking your calls. Laura from Madison is with us. Laura, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much. Yes, it's my understanding that one of the main people involved in this was a lawyer from Madison.
Mm-hmm. That would be Whitford, yes.
Now, you had all of the Supreme Court justices come up with the same, that there wasn't standing for this. How did we not see that coming?
He's a lawyer. He should know better, right?
Well, yeah, I would think so. Right?
Okay. That's a great question, Laura. Charlie, he's a lawyer. He actually was a former law professor. Why didn't he understand that he may not have standing here?
Well, first of all, I'll sort of quote a very old aphorism about lawyers representing themselves. And if you represent yourself in court, they often say you have a fool for a client as well as for a lawyer, because it's hard to advocate on your behalf because you're so passionate about the issue. So my guess is, I don't know this for a fact, but my guess is that he had very little to do with the preparation of the case. That's why you have lawyers. They're detached and dispassionate, and they try to argue the case.
Still, we had the country's best lawyers who made a case for somebody that the court said didn't actually have standing in the case. That seems a little odd.
It is a little odd. I have a feeling that what happened was is that they were so concerned about the standard, because that's what has tripped up litigants over and over and over again. What is the standard by which to measure whether or not this is unconstitutional gerrymandering? They focused so well on that they kind of didn't do their due diligence when it came to the standing issue, because other litigants had gotten to court, you know, before on issues of gerrymandering. So maybe they just kind of took their eye off the ball a little bit, and because of that, they failed to argue the merits to the court, or at least have that resolved. And I think that's one reason why the court punted it back, because they said they goofed. We're going to give them a second chance because we really should get to the merits on this case.
So are you hearing any reaction from policymakers here in Wisconsin since this ruling has come down?
I have not, but my suspicion is at least a sigh of relief in the near term, because they don't have to try and, in a rush, recreate districts. They can wait likely till the next census, because this is going to have to go back to the district court. They're going to have to review this case, and it's going to take probably another year or more if the Supreme Court will grant certiorari again. So they have probably until the next census to worry about this. And again, I even think that if the court rules in favor of Whitford and the other litigants, that it's not going to be a dramatic change, in the sense that you're still going to allow state legislatures to draw these districts if they want. They're just going to be corralled a bit in what they can do when they draw the map. So gerrymandering will still happen, but maybe not as aggressively, maybe not in a way that seems so evident and apparent to disadvantage the out party.
We're going to talk about who draws the districts in a moment. We are talking about the Supreme Court's unanimous decision to not make a decision on Wisconsin's redistricting case, Gill versus Whitford. We're talking to Charlie Jacobs, and we are taking your calls. What do you make of this Supreme Court non-decision? What do you expect from both sides going forward? 800-642-1234. It's the morning show, and we'll be back in a moment. It's the Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about the Supreme Court's unanimous decision yesterday to not make a decision on Wisconsin's redistricting case, Gill versus Whitford. We are taking your calls. What do you make of the Supreme Court decision on this case? Are there questions that you have about how things are going to be going forward? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joe from Viroqua, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. My opinion, it should basically be outlawed gerrymandering because it discourages voting. It discourages people to vote. If they know their vote isn't going to count, why vote? I've heard a number of people express that.
Joe, that's a great question. Thank you. Charlie, that could be one of the arguments, or maybe that is one of the arguments from the plaintiffs. It actually discourages people from voting, and so it should be illegal.
Again, what the court will likely say is, and yet if they have standards by which they can sort of measure how much people are discouraged to vote because of gerrymandering, but without that, how do they know that they were discouraged from voting because they were binge-watching Netflix or they were just tired or they didn't want to show up for whatever reason? It's somewhat difficult to measure that. And again, that winds up being more of a policy question than anything else. I mean, you might be able to increase vote turnout even in gerrymandered districts if states took on a campaign of information for individuals about voting or ran buses or whatever it took to get people to the polls or, as Australia does, mandate voting and make it an ordinance violation if you don't show up and vote. So there are a number of different ways we can do this, and I understand Joe's frustration and other people's frustration about this, but what the court is looking for is how do we know that that's the causal effect?
Terry from Green Bay, welcome to the program, Terry.
Hi, thanks. This is a really important topic for obviously a lot of people here. I've been working with an issue advocacy group about pushing nonpartisan redistricting reform. And one of the things that the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign recently pointed out is that over a third of the candidates and lawmakers currently in office running for election this cycle, over a third of them will not face a major party challenger. Now, that's because these districts have been packed and cracked to be able to make sure that people do that. And that's where millions of voters will be disadvantaged because people in these parties know that there is not a chance to win. So why waste money and resources to be able to put out a candidate if they're never going to win? And that discourages people from stepping up to run for office. And it is really a shame that so many Republicans and Democrats will not have a choice at the ballot box come this November because of these gerrymandered districts. And this just goes back onto the responsibility of lawmakers to pass something that is responsible to voters and stop rigging the system against them.
Terry, that was an excellent question. The last caller, Charlie, said it discourages people from voting. Terry says it discourages people from running for office.
Yeah, I mean, Terry makes an incredibly good point. I mean, this creates lack of opportunity for a number of reasons. So it just has a trickle-down effect. You know, a party has an advantage in a district. No one wants to run. Someone does step up to run. Well, no one from the local to the state to the national party is going to take scarce resources to support a candidate who is likely lamb to slaughter. Why invest those dollars? And so you're stuck, you know, trying to run a campaign on nickels when the other candidate has a war chest that is just insurmountable. And then, of course, that means that you may face one of those really aggressive campaigns to discredit you as somebody who is incapable of doing the job or not prepared to do it. And so why would you volunteer to be a pinata for the other party to just beat you up? Because, you know, if they beat you hard enough, candy's not falling out, just your reputation and everything you want to put into the public process. So it's really difficult, and I think Terry's exactly right to raise that issue.
So does the Supreme Court have the ability to say that this hurts democracy because it discourages people from running?
They do. I think that is a point they can make. And I think that's what Kagan was trying to say in her concurrence, and one of the reasons why you saw someone like Justice Breyer sign on to it, because Justice Breyer is what we call a pragmatist when he writes his opinions. And I think a lot of these more liberal justices are, because what you want to try to determine is you have a policy. What are the consequences for democracy from that policy? And they would say this harms democracy, and even though it may be a political question, it's one that we have to help resolve so that there are more competitive elections and so that people feel as though their vote is actually counting and not diluted. But again, I think one of the reasons you see a unanimous opinion here on standing is because they really did not make their case to be in the court. And as a result, they were really want to jump in and try to resolve this on the merits without getting to that first question. They want to be on such firm footing, have such a great foundation that nobody will question the outcome.
Paul from Lincoln County, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I am a county board supervisor in Lincoln County, and in March of last year, we voted 18-4. In favor of a resolution that was sent to the legislature and to the governor calling for nonpartisan drawing of maps. But I want to say here that it's not just the Supreme Court. I mean, the legislature has the power, mm-hmm. and the legislature has the power and it has the obligation to be drawing fair maps, and it has not done so. So that most counties in Wisconsin, that, according to my understanding, have sent similar resolutions to the legislature and to the governor, as well as some municipalities and some towns. So I would urge all those who are listening who are involved with any level of government in Wisconsin to pile on to the state legislature and tell them what their duty is here to draw maps that are fair. And not just wait for the Supreme Court to make its decision, because it's not the Supreme Court that's in the end going to draw maps, even if the Supreme Court rules in favor of Whitford at all.
So, Paul,
it's the state legislature that's going to do this.
Paul, thank you very much. That brings me to two questions I have, Charlie. Who draws the maps? Right now in Wisconsin, as Paul points out, legislators draw the maps. In California right now, there is an independent commission that draws maps for the state. That was put in under a Republican administration. So first of all, there's that. Second of all, if all of these counties and municipalities are sending resolutions to the legislature saying you need to redraw maps and it's not happening, is there a state Supreme Court case here?
So to your first question, the states are given freedom to determine what body is going to draft the districts and who might resolve any disputes about them in case, as was the circumstance a few years ago in Wisconsin, you have, say, a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature, and they can't agree on what the maps are going to look like. And so it usually defaults to state courts. So it can be virtually almost anybody. I mean, there's nothing specified anywhere about what the process is supposed to look like. You could have a computer draw them. You could throw darts at a map. You could do almost anything. Some might be considered arbitrary by courts, but there's nothing that grants the legislature any authority above anyone else, and that's why California, Iowa, Arizona have different approaches than most states, which still use state legislatures to do it. You know, to your second question, there may be a case for the state Supreme Court. There are times when state constitutions provide greater protections than the federal constitution. We sometimes forget that. Greater speech rights or greater rights regarding your ability to vote and cast a ballot. So there could be, but because of our focus on the federal courts as sort of the bastion of rights protection, a lot of individuals go there first because it seems like the prudent place to go. And the other thing to consider is if you have to do it in the state court, that means you have to do it 50 times mm-hmm. to overturn this kind of gerrymandering process. If you go to the Supreme Court, you kind of rip the Band-Aid off all at once, and hopefully whatever system they come up with in Washington is going to be applied to every state at the same time.
We are talking about the non-decision that the Supreme Court made on Monday to let stand right now districts in Wisconsin and Maryland and sent the plaintiffs back to come back with a better argument. Joan from Eau Claire, welcome to the program.
Good morning. This case was my last hope for fair elections in Wisconsin. We haven't had a fair election in Wisconsin since 2010 because of this gerrymandering. With the decision being unanimous on the part of the justices, it makes me reflect back to the people who crafted and developed this lawsuit. I mean, they should have been able to do a bang-up job, but it doesn't seem that they did. So then my question is, who are these people, and what was their motivation? Did they have our best interests at heart? Because I don't really know who these attorneys are, but with a unanimous decision, it really makes me question something about them. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Joan. Charlie, we did talk about this a few minutes ago. They were focused not on standing. They were focused on the argument at hand, right?
Again, I'm just, as an outsider, that's what my sort of vision is that they may have been a little bit too close to the issue of the merits of the case rather than the threshold question. Now, to Joan's point, I mean, the state has been arguing a standing issue from the get-go, that they don't have standing to bring this suit. So it should have been on their radar screen. Mm. Do I think that there was some sort of malfeasance or, you know, on the part of the litigants bringing this case? I don't think so. You have to remember that when you're pushing these kinds of rights issues, you're usually a group of underfunded individuals who are scrapping and scraping and trying to get to the court, which in itself is unbelievable. Remember that there are literally millions of legal cases per year in the United States. This year, the United States Supreme Court is likely to sign fewer than 60 cases. Mm. So, I mean, it's like getting struck by lightning to get your case to the United States Supreme Court. So they may have made some errors in judgment about how to argue this case, but boy, give them credit. They created a credible enough argument to get to the United States Supreme Court.
And very quickly, how long do you think before it's back in front of the Supreme Court?
It depends. I would say anywhere from 12 to 24 months. That's just a wild guess, but it depends on how the district court manages the case, what kind of time the litigants need to kind of do what they need to do as prescribed by Justice Kagan, and then whether or not the court takes it the next time. I mean, maybe they were trying to dodge a bullet here, and next time they won't even take the case for one reason or another. So we're going to have to wait and see, but it could be a year or two, hopefully before the census, so that there's some finality about what exactly is required of states.
Charlie Jacobs is Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College. Thanks for joining us today, Charlie.
Thank you for having me.
You can learn more about gerrymandering and redistricting at wiscontext.org, where you can read news stories, explore maps, and learn the difference between packing and cracking. That's wiscontext.org. This is The Morning Show.